Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. So far, we've featured stories exploring the complicated terrain of the human heart. But in today's episode, it's all about the body. Let's just put it this way. Is your sex life lackluster? Do you desperately want to fire things up with your partner? Well, be careful what you wish for, because it just might come true. It did for Mark Jaffe. Tony-nominated actor Stephen Bogardus brings us Mark's story, titled Finding Equilibrium in Seesawing Libidos.
Somehow, our three children were out of the house and otherwise engaged, leaving my wife and me a rare moment to ourselves. So I suggested to Karen that we take advantage by heading straight to the bedroom. She rebuffed me, asking, "How do men get anything done when they're thinking about sex all the time?" Perhaps I could have come up with some explanation, but that's not really what she was after. We had been married for 15 years by then, and were raising three daughters. In addition, Karen was a busy OBGYN and part-time moil. Our opportunities for having sex were scarce. Karen's interest was even scarcer. Friends who married long before I did told me that passion may wane in a marriage, but that love doesn't have to. 15 years into my marriage, I was hoping that just a touch of rekindled lust would enable my love to more easily flourish. Karen wasn't as concerned about commingling those twin emotions. Her point of view was reinforced each day at work when her patients complained how their interest in sex had faded to the background of life's challenges. For these women and my wife, there had to be the perfect confluence of events for sex to happen. My wife's requirements were that her job had to be going well, the children didn't need her attention, the house had to be clean, the temperature had to be between 76 and 84 degrees, and the Democrats had to control at least one branch of government. Her patients would ask if there wasn't some pill that would let them ignore the externals and give them back their desire. But she knew there was no magic pill. All she could do was commiserate. She would come home and tell me how typical we were, and that I would just have to deal with my oversized libido like all the other unsatisfied married men out there. Then we learned she had Parkinson's. Suddenly, we were faced with new challenges that completely outweighed any issue of unequal sexual desire. Our fantasy of the next 35 years had included Karen staying in a job she loved for as long as she wished, and then for the two of us to shift to a retirement of travel and newfound hobbies. That image was replaced by one depicting her early exit from the job she loved, and a retirement filled with financial concerns, frequent doctor visits, and uncertain health. For now, she would be living her same life, with the minor addition of keeping a secret, so as not to alarm anyone or harm her career, and taking some pills each day. Those pills would change our life more than Parkinson's. Some of the most common Parkinson's medications have a potential side effect of compulsive behavior. This can destroy lives when, for example, formerly staid members of the community end up gambling away their life savings or compulsively shopping their way to financial ruin. Thankfully, my wife suffered neither of those side effects. What she did experience, however, was hypersexuality. It started slowly. I would set the mood for a romantic evening and gird myself for the familiar rejection, only to have her say, "Yes." The positive reinforcement led me to try again a few days later, and again I was rewarded. Soon, I stopped hearing no entirely. Then she was the one suggesting we race to the bedroom when an opportunity arose. More than suggesting, she insisted. Unlike my meek, hopeful forays, she began to demand it, urgently and often, and in places I never dared. Her former parameters for sex also became somewhat more generous. Now she merely had to have a job, the children had to be alive, the house had to be standing, the temperature had to be between 0 and 104 degrees, and the Democrats had to control at least one branch of government. The combination of those things happening all at once occurred with great frequency. I was thrilled with our renewed sex life, and so was Karen. She kept saying how happy she was to be back in the club. Karen's Parkinson's progressed to the point where she had to increase her medication. I wondered whether this might also increase her obsession with sex. I got my answer a week later, when out of the blue she asked me the exact same question she had asked a few years before, although this time with a different inflection and a wholly different meaning. How do men get anything done when they're thinking about sex all the time? That's when I started to fade. I was no longer able to consistently please her. Sex became more obligation than joy. In 2 short years, we had completely switched roles. I would soldier on. To keep going, I sought help from my doctor in the form of Viagra or Cialis, but he was reluctant to prescribe erectile dysfunction drugs for an otherwise healthy 52-year-old male. He asked about our frequency of sex. I told him 9 to 12 times a week. "Oh," he said. I didn't realize the severity of the problem. It's understood that when one spouse gets Parkinson's, the other spouse will be affected by it. But we never expected that I would have to start taking medication to help with the side effects of my wife's medication. She was cursing her amped-up libido for what it was doing to me. Something had to give. What gave was the secret we had kept for 2 years. Her diagnosis. Karen decided that the consequences of going public and perhaps losing her job couldn't be worse than living in the bubble we had created. So she began to tell people. And when she did, everyone was sympathetic and supportive, which allowed Karen to focus her obsessive behavior into something worthwhile: fundraising and advocating for Parkinson's research. Last year, we became empty nesters. This is the time I envisioned long ago, when she and I would travel and rekindle our sex life. My libido isn't as strong as it was before the diagnosis, but it is back to being stronger than Karen's. I'm okay with that. I'm thankful for our years of youthful lust. We were each given the rare opportunity to be on opposite ends of the desire spectrum and have an appreciation and understanding of this common sexual divide. And in the end, my married friends were right. There may be a limit to passion, but love flourishes.
Stephen Bogardus, reading Mark Jaffe's essay, Finding Equilibrium in Seesawing Libidos. We'll hear from Mark on how he and Karen are doing today, right after the break. We're back. It's Modern Love, the podcast. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And now a postscript from Modern Love editor Daniel Jones and the author of this week's essay, comedy writer Mark Jaffe.
I decided to write this piece for the New York Times because our experience was kind of a be careful what you wish for experience, and getting to experience what the other side has experienced in a relationship.
Probably, you know, 20 to 25% of submissions of Modern Love come from men. They can be just as revealing as women, but usually not about sex, and usually not about not getting enough in their marriages. It's just too sensitive of an area, or too emasculating of an area, I guess. So the fact that Mark is able to wade into this dicey material and take charge of it with this great sense of humor, it was just a really, really refreshing look at sex in marriage and about vulnerability. They're things that everybody wonders about, and it's such a relief when someone just gets out there and starts the conversation.
To me, as a comedy writer, we're always putting ourselves out there, whether the audience is in front of us or whether it's separated by somebody reading it. Comedy is pain plus time, and as a comedian, I think we're able to shorten that time frame. You know, we see the funny in something much more quickly than other people do. So it's just something I'm somewhat used to and willing to do because I thought it was something that could relate to a lot of people.
What was really funny about this piece was the aftermath. We got email after email of people saying, you know, what is this? What is this drug? How could you not name this drug? Here's an example of an email that we got. You really aren't going to divulge the name of the medication? This could save thousands of marriages. I'd pay any price for it. Please.
I'm happy to say the drug. Unfortunately, it's not like I have a magic bullet. It's Requip, but it's only a side effect for a small minority of people, so it's not something you could really prescribe this drug for that purpose. So I can't save everybody's marriage, otherwise I would gladly do that. Parkinson's affects our life daily, of course, but for the most part, we're able to do everything we want to do, with slight variations and not to the extent that we wanted to do. It's a necessity to keep an optimistic attitude. We together started a foundation called Shaking with Laughter. She's shaking, I'm laughter, that's what we like to say. And it's nice as the spouse of somebody who has this disease to be able to feel like I'm helping out in an important way, aside from just being there day to day. I can't say that we really talk too much about the future. You know what? We never thought Parkinson's would be in our future, and we had a vision of what it would be like without Parkinson's, and then you get Parkinson's, and that changes it. In many ways, it's been changed for the better, and we've come to accept it, and other than that, we'll just play it day to day.
Mark Jaffe, author of this week's essay, Finding Equilibrium in Seesawing Libidos. You also heard from Dan Jones, editor of Modern Love for the New York Times. Special thanks this week to Tony-nominated actor Stephen Bogardus, known for his wide range of work on screen and on stage, including Man of La Mancha, Love, Valor, Compassion, Falsettos, and more. You can see him in Edie Brickell and Steve Martin's original musical Bright Star, opening on Broadway later this month. Next week on Modern Love, Emmy Rossum reads us the story of young love above the clouds.
It seemed torn from the back of a Nicholas Sparks paperback. A Southern science major from a small liberal arts school and a Northern humanities major from a huge pre-professional university meet in the skies over the Mediterranean. We kissed that first time. And then we kissed again.
Did you meet your great love in an unusual way? We want to hear about it. Send us a voice memo or email the story to modernlove@wbur.org. Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Perotti, and Amory Sievertson. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. Follow Modern Love on Facebook at facebook.com/modernlove. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We'll see you next week.